It's the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. When the founders created the U.S. Constitution, they embedded a mechanism for changing it. It's Article 5. We've used Article 5 to amend the Constitution through Congress and state legislatures, but Americans have never applied another option in Article 5, a constitutional convention. Our guests today say it's increasingly possible and potentially dangerous. We explore how and why throughout this hour, and we welcome your thoughts and your questions. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas at WPR.org. Our guests have written a book called The Constitution in Jeopardy, an unprecedented effort to rewrite our fundamental law and what we can do about it. It's out just this week. Peter Prindeville is a non-resident fellow at the Stanford Constitutional Law Center and an attorney based in Washington, D.C. He's a former fellow on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Peter, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having us.
And Russ Feingold is the president of the American Constitution Society and an affiliated scholar of the Stanford Constitutional Law Center. He served for nearly 20 years as a U.S. senator representing Wisconsin and was a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Feingold, thank you for joining us on the morning show.
We're delighted to have this opportunity.
Senator, we're just getting started, and already some people have probably dismissed this. They don't believe that we really need to worry about a constitutional convention. Why do you think we do?
Well, that's part of the problem. People have a tendency to discount things that might be coming our way, even though the evidence is mounting, because they don't want to believe it could happen. But the fact is that Peter and I have done a deep dive and have discovered that there is a very well-organized effort across the country by very far-right radical groups trying to call a constitutional convention that is almost certain to do a radical rewrite of our United States Constitution in a way that I think most people wouldn't like. So it's sort of under the radar. They kind of like it that way, but we're going to take the lid off of it and make sure that people know that there is a great risk to some of the best elements of our Constitution because of this movement.
I see parallels to January 6th, that feeling that things like this don't happen here. It's doomsday thinking. We don't need to focus on it. But also what you're talking about and changing the Constitution through a convention, that's not insurrection. That is totally legal. Right, Peter?
Correct. Constitutional amendment is foundational. The framers saw Article 5 as the cornerstone of a system of constitutional self-governance. And so constitutional amendment is fundamentally legitimate, and in many circumstances, it can be good. The concern about the convention route and the focus of our book is the myriad array of unanswered questions about how an Article 5 convention would actually function in practice. We've never held one before, which is quite striking if you think about the long history of the Constitution. And although we've amended the Constitution fairly frequently through the congressional proposal route, we've never had a convention. And that poses some great danger.
We'll talk about that a lot more. I want to touch on what you said about it being fundamental. How important was Article 5 to the beginning of our constitutional democracy, Peter?
Well, again, fundamental. There's a fascinating anecdote about how the framers and the founding generation saw constitutional amendment. George Washington is said, after the first constitutional convention adjourned in 1787, he remarked that he thought the Constitution as drafted was actually quite flawed, but he encouraged citizens to adopt the document precisely because it could be changed. He saw a constitutional amendment as the reason that the Constitution should be adopted. And we argue in the book that this is really a lost element of our constitutional history and our political culture, that constitutional amendment should be a point of first order discussion in public life. But that requires reform to Article 5, which is a topic we discuss at length in the book. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution with attorney Peter Prindeville and also former U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, Russ Feingold. They've written the book, The Constitution in Jeopardy. And we're welcoming your calls at 800-642-1234. Senator Feingold, constitutional amendments that we have seen, they've outlawed slavery, recognized women's suffrage. They've established the rights to marry, to worship, I mean, to bear arms, among other rights. How do you see potentially new amendments through a convention process or otherwise undoing what previous amendments enshrined into law?
Well, everything you just mentioned would be on the table at such a convention. And although Peter is, of course, correct that there are open questions about how this convention would work, these extremists have already answered the question the way they want, which is they claim that the way it should be done is a convention would be called what they call a convention of the states, which is not a legitimate term, where each state has one vote. In other words, it wouldn't be a popular vote of we the people on these constitutional amendments. It would be each state gets one vote, so it would be even more extreme than the problems with the malapportioned electoral college. And so they've already shown us by they're having mock conventions of what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to restrict the lawmaking authority of Congress to a tiny fraction of its current extent. They voted already in a mock convention to repeal the income tax, restricting a federal agency's rulemaking ability. So let's say you want to have a rule that has to do with climate change or air pollution or water pollution. They removed that authority. And they even passed a provision that would allow 30 state legislatures to overrule federal laws and regulations. So even though it was duly passed through Congress by the elected representatives of all the people, they're telling us what their agenda is already, and it's right there for you to read in our book.
Senator, is there a scenario, though, where calling a convention could be a positive thing for the country?
Yes, but it would require, as we point out in the book, that you got to change the way Article 5 works. The way it works right now, as Peter pointed out, is we have no idea what the rules are, and it could create a constitutional crisis. I mean, James Madison himself was very nervous about this provision, Article 5. He said there are difficulties in form and quorum. And what it means is we have no idea about how the rules should be set up in terms of the subjects that can be brought up, in terms of who becomes the people that actually are at these conventions and get to vote. And in this gap, these far-right people are moving to try to set up a very far-right series of delegates who would control these conventions on a mere majority vote.
You write, the framers left no rules. Peter, what is the process, though, as spelled out, and then where does it leave off?
Well, Article 5 provides that there are two routes for amendments to be proposed to the people of the states for ratification. The first is that two houses of Congress, by two-thirds vote, can propose an amendment to the states. And that's the route that's been used throughout history from the Bill of Rights onward. But there's a second route for proposal, and that's the Article 5 convention route. And Article 5 provides that upon the applications of two-thirds of the state legislatures, Congress must call a convention for proposing amendments. But beyond the point of calling the convention, the Constitution is silent about how that convention functions, who attends the convention, under what rules it operates. And in that vast constitutional void lies great uncertainty. And so, and there's very little, there are a few ways to resolve these uncertainties. The Constitution doesn't provide rules. Relevant history doesn't provide rules because we've never held a convention under Article 5. And it's quite possible that the courts would be unwilling and we argue unable to moderate what occurs at a convention, because at the end of the day, Article 5 and constitutional amendment are some of the purest manifestations of popular self-government. It cuts right to the core of who we are as a people and who we are as a democracy. And so it raises great concern.
We're talking with attorney Peter Prindeville and also former Senator Russ Feingold. Their book is called The Constitution in Jeopardy. What questions do you have about a constitutional convention or how some extremists see it as a way to change our country? What do you want to know or what are your thoughts? Join in by calling 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. America's founding document allows for a constitutional convention. Article 5 makes it possible, but our guests say it doesn't lay out details on how to call a convention or how it would function. We're talking about what that means for the future of America here on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking with former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold and attorney Peter Prindeville. Their new book explores these concerns. And we welcome your calls at 800-642-1234. You can also email your questions or your ideas to ideas@WPR.org. Senator Feingold, your book also addresses the fact that even if amendments aren't fully passed through a process, if radical amendments are brought together through a constitutional convention, they could have an effect on policy, on communities. And one example of that is the Equal Rights Amendment. You are on the record supporting that, and it would guarantee equal legal rights for all American citizens, regardless of sex. But that isn't something that has changed the Constitution itself. What do you want to say about the Equal Rights Amendment?
Well, it's my view that the Equal Rights Amendment has already been validly ratified, that in fact, 38 states have ratified it, with Virginia recently doing it a couple of years ago. And yes, Congress had put a time limitation on when it had to be ratified by, but my reading of the provisions in the Constitution, Article 5, does not allow Congress to put that time of a limitation on. Now, they've done it over the years, but now there appears to be a real chance to challenge that, and I think that it's appropriate, and those of us at the American Constitution Society believe that the Biden administration should publish a new version of the Constitution with the Equal Rights Amendment as the 28th Amendment. So, yes, we write in the book that this is a something that people can do, whether on the right or left, push for constitutional amendments. And, of course, that one has gone through the process that is provided for with congressional approval. The problem is the way they're doing this with the convention could lead to a simple majority vote at these conventions, putting these amendments into play. And these amendments, it's been proven, can last forever. They don't necessarily expire, so you have to think about that twice.
So you're concerned that Congress set a time limit on the Equal Rights Amendment, and also that there's additional concern then about the fact that amendments can sit out there in perpetuity.
Yeah, what we're saying is there's no legal authority for really for time limits. There's a little bit of suggestion of it in one of the Supreme Court opinions, but that basically that if something goes into play, it can be in play forever. And there's even a provision called the Corwin Amendment that tried to avert the Civil War that's still out there that would make sure that slavery not only would could exist, but it couldn't be repealed, that it couldn't be eliminated. So you have to think very carefully about what you put into play. And the problem here is that these very extreme radical provisions would come out of this convention and would be in play almost forever, conceivably. And that's part of the danger here.
Peter, there's a conservative opposition to the Equal Rights Amendment and right-wing support for convening a constitutional convention. So what does that say as you think about those two things together?
That obviously is subject matter focused. In some ways, the opposition to the ERA is similar to the many goals that convention proponents have made clear that they aim to pursue through a convention. I think regarding the timing element that you just raised with Russ, it's interesting. Our concern is that while we can debate the legality of Congress's timeline in the ERA, what is abundantly clear is that the lack of a timeline is even more troubling. And as Russ said, the Corwin Amendment, there's a number of amendments. Most people forget that the Bill of Rights, as proposed by Congress in the late 18th century, actually had more than 10 amendments. Two of them have sat unratified and are actually, technically speaking, still pending before the people. If there was a movement to encourage ratification of those amendments, it could be quite successful. And so our point is that we need to think about these questions of constitutional amendment and constitutional change with the gravitas that they deserve, and that this is a generational concern, especially when you think that we haven't amended the Constitution since 1992, and that amendment itself that we adopted in 1992 was proposed in the late 18th century.
We're talking with co-authors of the new book, The Constitution in Jeopardy, attorney Peter Prindeville and also former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. I want to welcome Ryan in Milwaukee. Hi, Ryan.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was curious about ratification. I agree with Senator Feingold and his colleague that any attempt to rewrite the Constitution would probably amend or rewrite it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ryan. Ryan, can you say that last sentence for us one more time? You cut out a little bit.
Yes, the new Constitution that could be written by a convention would still need to be ratified by 3/4 of the states to take effect. And I'm curious how likely your guests think that ratification of any new constitution would be, should we go that route.
Ryan, thank you so much for bringing this up, and we appreciate your call. Peter, what is the likelihood of this actually being able to follow through if it happens?
Sure. Ryan raises a great point. I mean, clearly, you know, 3/4 of the states is a particularly high bar for ratification. And as we discuss in the book, you know, scholars have studied this, and the U.S. Constitution is amongst the hardest to amend in the world, precisely because of this 3/4 bar. Our concern is that the 3/4 bar can seem high at first, and it is indeed high, but we need to look at it closer and realize that because ratifications can occur at any time throughout time, like I said just previously, there are amendments that have been ratified, you know, over 100 years. We need to think about it with that timeline and the danger that this kind of piecemeal ratification approach could provide. If these amendments were proposed, and it would probably be a large group of amendments, it would likely be, and each one would likely be voted individually. It would change state level politics, and it could. It could happen faster than we might think.
Thank you so much for that. And thanks again, Ryan, for calling 800-642-1234. Now we have Astrid in Madison who is on the phone with us. Hi, Astrid.
My question is, I've been to a fair number of right-wing protests, extreme right protests, and they seem to be very, very good at grassroots organizing in these gray areas of the law to do things that none of us thought were possible. What can we as centrist liberals or leftists do in terms of organizing to counteract that force?
Astrid, thanks for that. And I would also say probably some more kind of centralized conservatives might be interested in this, too, if they're looking at the extreme right. Senator Feingold, how do you respond to that?
Well, he's absolutely right. They are much more organized on this than those who think this is a mistake. In fact, my wife, my brother-in-law went down and attended a rally led by Senator Santorum last summer, where they were organizing this right here in Madison. And of course, Wisconsin has passed several versions of these applications. So how do people counter it? Well, the first thing is they have to be aware of it. As far as we know, this is the first book to ever sort of say, look, this is what's going on. They are having training sessions and mock conventions. Very sophisticated ones that they've done, for example, in Williamsburg, Virginia. So this is one of the things that people have to become aware of. And, you know, we weren't aware of it a few years ago. I started teaching a course about Article 5, and it became apparent as I taught and then when I started working with Peter that this thing is really pretty far along. And so, yes, people should get the book. People should especially read our chapter that is entitled What Trump and the Tea Party Couldn't Do. And it lays out exactly what they're trying to do. Once people hear this, and we've tried this out on people in the media and law professors and citizens that we know, they say, that concerns me. It sounds a little scary. And what you have to do is fight the battle in the state legislatures to make sure that these applications don't get through, or if they have gotten through, sometimes they can be rescinded, which is what the state of Illinois has done by rescinding a number of applications that it did a few years ago, now that they're realizing what it might be used for. So there's a lot that citizens can do.
Hmm. We continue this conversation as we're talking with former Wisconsin U.S. Senator Russ Feingold and attorney Peter Prindeville. They've written a book called The Constitution in Jeopardy. And we're taking your calls throughout this hour. It's 800-642-1234. You can email your thoughts or questions also to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. A news update is next here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about Article 5 of the Constitution, which lays out how Americans can change our founding document. Our guests say there's increasing support from right-wing extremists to hold a constitutional convention, and they argue that Article 5's vague language about the process leaves that process and our rights and our system of government vulnerable. What do you think? You can email ideas@WPR.org. Former Wisconsin U.S. Senator Russ Feingold is with us. So is attorney Peter Prindeville, who researches constitutional change. They've written a book called The Constitution in Jeopardy. Peter, if a constitutional convention is held and if amendments are passed and ratified by enough states, what confidence do you have that new amendments to the Constitution would be upheld? And yes, we're leading into a conversation about the Supreme Court.
Well, I mean, a validly ratified amendment, by definition, is part of the Constitution, and there's nothing to uphold. It is part of the Constitution, and the Supreme Court, of course, would be obligated to apply the amendment in cases that might come before it. Now, of course, there are questions about process. If there were questions about ratification itself, you know, was the ratification valid? Those might be justiciable. They might be able to be raised in court, but even that is an open question. But in terms of whether or not the amendment itself could be upheld, of course, there's nothing to uphold.
The conservative majority on the U.S. Supreme Court recently overturned Roe v. Wade, and that removed a decades-old constitutional protection for women's access to abortion services. Senator Feingold, does the removal of a constitutional right like this suggest that even amending the Constitution is no guarantee that its protections will remain?
I mean, there's a real difference between the Supreme Court making a ruling like this, which I think was a terrible ruling in light of the history of Roe v. Wade. But what this convention could do is lock in something that, as Peter is absolutely right, cannot be overturned. For example, they could simply ban abortion across the country. They could ban gay marriage in the Constitution. And by the way, those amendments have been introduced in Congress before. This isn't crazy. They haven't gone anywhere. But the fact is that these constitutional rights could be taken away basically forever. And that's not the current case. The Dobbs decision can be overturned. States like Kansas and others can vote and say, wait a minute, we don't want a prohibition on this. But if a constitutional convention validly goes ahead and does this, there's really nothing to be done about it. I'd say Peter's right that, you know, if the process itself is flawed, for example, we think that they are using a phony way to count the numbers of applications, and maybe the Supreme Court would say, wait a minute, the whole process here was flawed. That's not clear. But no, that's the danger. It's one thing for the Supreme Court to do this terrible thing right now. It's another thing for them to actually put it in the language of the Constitution. And that's what this radical group is likely to do.
We're talking with former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold and also attorney Peter Prindeville about their new book. And we are taking your emails at ideas@WPR.org. Matt from Madison sent us an email. Matt says, the problem is the people that wrote the Constitution. White male landowners are still in power and have no qualms about defining the pages of the Constitution in any way that benefits their ideological belief system. Senator Feingold, do you agree with Matt, or do you think there's more nuance there?
There's a lot of truth to that statement. And in fact, it's why in our book, we don't just talk about the Constitution being in jeopardy because of this far right effort. We also think that there's a jeopardy that we haven't been able to change the Constitution through normal means where it really needs to be changed. For example, the Electoral College is a reflection of an anti-majoritarian, anti-we the people approach to picking the president of the United States. So what we propose is that there would be a constitutional amendment passed by Congress that would change this process and make it more of a popular approach. For example, we have a proposal in our book that says that a majority vote of all qualified voters nationwide would have to support an amendment, and also in a majority of the individual states. It's not unlike a proposal that Fighting Bob La Follette of Wisconsin made over 100 years ago. We also believe that there should be a constitutional amendment to change this Article 5 to make sure that there is some way to define what would be the content or what could be brought up at these conventions. What we have right now is no rule at all, and that leads to a great danger of what we call a runaway convention that has been a fear for a long time, and it's one of the reasons that there has never been a constitutional convention, although it's come very close several times, as we write about in the book.
Mm-hmm. We're taking calls at 800-642-1234, and we have Sam in Wausau ready to talk with us. Good morning, Sam.
I want to say that despite being left-leaning, you guys have always taken my calls over the years. I appreciate that, but I don't know, Mr. Feingold, if you ever did a decent hard day's work in the
Sam, I'm going to go ahead and jump in here. I appreciate that, but that's against our caller guidelines to make personal comments about guests. So I'm going to go ahead and just let people know that that is something that we follow, and I appreciate your call, but we're going to move on now. We're going to move on to Mike in Milwaukee. Hey, Mike.
I'm going to try to make this quick. In 2011, I believe, no, 2010, Citizens United passed. And so we have laws that say that corporations are people and money is the same as speech. And so we know what that means during election time. And right after that, a month later, there was a meeting at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School concerning the organization called MoveToAmend.org, and it was to pass an amendment that would say money is not speech, corporations are not people. Anyway, so my question is, that's been going on now for a number of years, and I'm wondering what the heaviness of and the importance of what the gentlemen are talking about this morning, will that undermine any effort to change that Supreme Court ruling in that this is so much more important, I think.
Mike, thanks for mentioning that, especially as we talk about the Supreme Court with our guests. Peter, what about these kind of different efforts and issues that are in front of the court and also that citizens are trying to figure out, you know, how to support or how to work against?
Sure. I mean, it's an incredibly important question. And, you know, there are many, many issues in public life today that are ripe for constitutional reform. Overturning a case like Citizens United and my book is top of the list. Our concern here is about the process. What are the rules, and how would such an amendment be proposed? And so, this is part of the reason why our book is focused both on this current jeopardy of this current right wing effort, but also the other jeopardy that it really is too hard to amend the Constitution. And we need more settled procedure and a procedure that is more popular and democratic so that there could be a reasonable possibility that the people could overturn something like Citizens United or pass amendments that represent overwhelmingly popular policies.
Peter, how difficult is it then to amend the Constitution?
Well, as we said with one of our previous callers, it is quite hard, but it's hard in two different ways. And I think this is why it's important to discuss. The first is it's actually quite hard to propose amendments. The amendments need to be both proposed and ratified. The proposal, like we said before, it can either be done by two-thirds of each House of Congress or by this convention, which is our topic today. But then they also need to be ratified by three-quarters of the people in three-quarters of the states. We propose that the proposal methods be relaxed and that the ratification methods likewise be relaxed and reformed to be more democratic in nature. And this is in accord with what the founding generation saw. The founding generation was quite clear in their belief that relatively frequent popular constitutional change was the cornerstone in these new American conceptions of democracy and self-government. And our goal is to rekindle those founding era debates in public life today and have some serious discussion about the future of the Constitution and what it means to live in a self-governing democracy.
Senator Feingold, some people feel deeply passionate about the Constitution. It's sacred. They don't want it to change. They fear the risk. So to willingly consider and even talk about more frequently altering the Constitution, how can we trust ourselves as a nation to do that?
Well, we have to really sort of mature as a nation, realize that no Constitution is perfect and that we have a choice here between allowing extreme right-wing groups to rewrite the Constitution in a way that'll take us back to the period prior to Constitution, to the Articles of Confederation that didn't work, or we can make sure the Constitution is properly changed to reflect the reality of America in the 21st century. That's what the founders wanted. As Peter has pointed out, George Washington was the biggest advocate for this. He said, let it be corrected by amendment. This is what they wanted. This is why they created this article, but frankly, it's not working very well because it's the hardest one in the world to use from the point of view of passing it through Congress, and there's such danger and no rules of doing it by convention. So we need to fix it, and no country should be so arrogant as to think that something that was written in the late 18th century is perfectly adapted to everything that happens in the future, and that's what our founders believed themselves.
Former Wisconsin U.S. Senator Russ Feingold and attorney Peter Prindeville stay with us. They're co-authors of the book, The Constitution in Jeopardy. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Boltina. Thanks for being with us here on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking about the book, The Constitution in Jeopardy, with co-authors former Wisconsin U.S. Senator Russ Feingold and Washington, D.C. attorney Peter Prindeville. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Joe from Star Lake ready to join the conversation. Hey, Joe.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me on. And I love the title of the program, The Ideas Network. This is an idea and a question. And I've thought about this for a long time. In fact, I've talked to many of my friends. I would say I'm a very centralist thinker in terms of politics. I keep saying to my friends and people I know that they should join the Republican Party because I think that it's at the party level that democracy is really being decided. And my question is, what I said earlier to someone was, you know, if you're in China and you want change, you have to join the Communist Party. There's only one party. We only have two parties. We've never been able to evolve a third party. So you have to join one of those two parties, and I'm just wondering what protection someone has, because I know there's a great deal of intimidation going on now, but if you were to show up at the local Republican Party, I think you'd be surprised how few people there are there, and how big a voice you would suddenly have over things that eventually would have to do with not just candidates the party puts forward, but this idea of changing the Constitution, and that we could moderate this fringe kind of ideology that I think is very destructive. So that's my question and my idea for the network.
Joe, thank you for bringing that up. Senator Feingold, what do you think of that, the ethics of that strategy or that strategy even in practice?
Well, what a great comment. I think there are a lot of people who have left or feel uncomfortable with the Republican Party. And if they don't want to be Democrats, of course, I have traditionally been a Democrat and an M1. But, you know, if they feel like participating here, they need to get back into participating. When I was a state legislator for 10 years, there were a lot of Republican pro-choice members of the state Senate, particularly women. And they were driven out by these far-right ideologues, so that the state legislature now is not just Republican. It is far-right radical. And so what you have are these are the people that are going to be make the decisions under the current scenario for this constitutional convention. They have passed a bill in Wisconsin that would allow them to pick who the delegates are. In other words, the people of the state wouldn't get to vote. Who do we want to be the delegates at the constitutional convention? It's just this far-right group that has gerrymandered the state of Wisconsin, voting-wise and otherwise, and it's a perfect illustration of how dangerous and wrong a constitutional convention under the current rules are, because there's no limitation or serious control over partisan gerrymandering in this country. So I would love to see more people get involved, more moderate people involved in the Republican Party. We need a two-party system, and it's a two-party system that can help prevent a mistake like this being made, such as having a far-right radical constitutional convention.
Joe, thanks again for the call. Let's take Mike in Portage now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks. What are you thinking?
I just wanted to make the comment, and I think Senator Feingold just really covered a good chunk of it, is it's a dangerous time right now to go into something like a constitutional convention and give that much power to a group of people who can't even acknowledge that their candidate lost the presidency. And instead they, you know, bring guns to the Capitol and they storm the Capitol. Like, how do we expect those types of people to behave when there's a large number of them that support that idea, even though it's factually proven wrong? How do we allow those people in to be part of that conversation when who knows what's going to happen? Who knows? Are they going to storm the convention? Are they going to come in and try to, you know, forcibly change things? Like, I'm trying not to be alarmist on this, but they've kind of been proving like the real extreme lengths to which they'd go to.
Thank you for that question. And that's Paul in Madison, actually. And we can hear in Paul's voice, trying not to be alarmist, but, you know, being concerned about this. Peter, what do you think?
Well, I think it's an important point. And this is why Russ and I focus so much on procedures and rules. We talk a lot in the book about guardrails. When a convention like this meets, you're really going to the motherboard and tinkering. And that could be a great thing, but it's also a moment of great danger. And I agree, you know, our democracy and our country, we are in a precarious moment. And our position is that we need to have guardrails that can guide constitutional debate and political debate to the kind of high level of discourse that is required for these fundamental questions about the nature of government, the nature of constitutional rights, and even more foundationally, the nature of democracy and self-government. And I agree, it's a precarious moment, and that's indeed why we titled the book the way we did. It poses an incredible jeopardy.
We had a caller who couldn't stay with us that was talking about the fact that they believed that they're seeing people from the extreme right try to create an America that is not inclusive of women's rights or inclusive of the rights of people of color. And I was struck by the fact that they said that's not what America stands for. And I wonder what you think of that, Senator Feingold, if you think that that's true, or if you think that you're seeing a lot of people say, no, we do think that America stands for fewer rights for certain people.
I think most Americans don't buy that at all. I think they realize that, as we say at the American Constitution Society, that there are founding failures in our Constitution. Look who wasn't even in the room. Women, African-Americans, Native Americans, they weren't even there. So the idea that somehow you're going to continue or make it even worse at this point through a constitutional convention and go back even more backward to exclude people when we have a very diverse country in the 21st century is a formula for disaster. And the previous caller said it perfectly. The way in which the far right is behaving right now, makes it almost impossible to believe that they would sort of behave at a convention like this and be reasonable. So we have a chapter called We the People in Perilous Times, where we basically say, look, you can't do this at this point because of the way things are being done in this country. It would lead to a constitutional chaos and potentially the passage of amendments that would turn us in a very, very dangerous racially divided and otherwise divided country.
When we think about talking about the Article 5 with Attorney Peter Prindeville and former Wisconsin U.S. Senator Russ Feingold on their book, The Constitution in Jeopardy. And my question was, when we're thinking about that and working through it, what do you have to say when people consider the fact that you lay out this idea that people on the extreme right have been working on this for decades and wanting us to talk about it right now? Peter, why is this the moment where we might have to stand up and pay attention?
Well, things have come, have been coming to a crescendo within the last few years. This movement to hold a convention, it started to gain ground during President Obama's presidency. But it has come to a faster pace within recent years. Just in July, a resolution was introduced in Congress claiming that the threshold had been met and that a convention should be held. Governor Scott Walker made the same claim to a gathering of Republican lawmakers a year or so ago. And so now that we have resolutions being introduced in Congress, formal presidential candidates making these claims, and Russ and I dispute those claims as a legal matter, but nonetheless, this issue is really coming into the political field, and it's important for citizens not only to be aware of it, but to understand the history and all of the important information and background around Article 5, because it is so important for people to understand and be able to address in the public square.
Senator Feingold, we've got about 30 seconds. What do you want to leave people with?
And we're not trying to scare people, but we are trying to alert people. We want people to understand that this Constitution that so many of us cherish is in a lot of danger. As Peter just said, there's actually a bill that's been introduced that would start implementing this in January if the Republicans take over the House. So I know there's a lot of things on people's minds, but this is one that we have to worry about and we have to be organized about.
Senator Feingold, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Peter Prindeville is a non-resident fellow at the Stanford Constitutional Law Center. Russ Feingold is the president of the American Constitution Society and a former U.S. senator from Wisconsin. They've written the book, The Constitution in Jeopardy. I'm Keeley Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.